tell you this morning, talk to you about a king from history. Let's just say maybe a king from Egypt or a king from England. If I were to tell you a story about a great king, there's a good chance that I would begin talking about this king's origins, his birth. I'd probably tell you a little bit about his parents. And they would most likely, you know, be important people. Maybe royalty. Maybe a king. Maybe a queen. I would probably tell you about the place where this child was born, the city. You know, and we might expect it. It'd be likely that it would be an important city like London or Rome or, you know, an important, distinguished city. I'd probably tell you about where the child was located in that city. Maybe it's a cathedral or a palace or a temple or some distinguished, important building. I'd probably tell you about who was there at the birth, and you'd expect it to be people of nobility and important people. And the reason why I would give you all these details about this king's birth, about his origins, is because I would be trying to highlight and emphasize his greatness. Look at how great this king is. These are who his parents are. This is where he was born. This is the city he's born in. When we get to the Bible gives us and tells a story about a king, and his name is Jesus. And in fact, the Bible gives us the origins and the story of the birth account of this king. But here's what's so unique. Here's what you wouldn't expect. Here's what's so unlikely about the story that the Bible tells us about this king. His parents were not real important, well-known people. They were just normal, old, common people. Normal old Joe. The city where he was born was Bethlehem. Not a significant city. It was significant according to the Old Testament. But for worldly standards, it was not a significant city. That's why when Mary and Joseph got to that city, there was no room for them. Because it was not a significant city that had a lot of room for people. It was a small, kind of a no-name kind of city. He was born in the place where he was born, in that city, the location, a manger, a stable where animals were located. That's not really what you'd expect. And then the people who were there, the people who were witnesses to his birth were who? Important people of nobility? No, shepherds. Normal, common, mundane people. And so here's the question that we have to ask when we read the Christmas story, when we think about the Christmas story. If the Bible is trying to promote this king, Jesus, if the Bible's goal is to promote him so that we follow him and worship him and recognize he's Lord, if that's the goal of the Bible, why give these details about his birth, which are not so much details that represent his greatness as much as details that represent his normality, his commonness? Why do it? There's a couple reasons why the Bible does it. One, because that's the way it happened. You know, the Bible is interested in history. The Bible is interested in telling us what actually happened in history. So part of the reason why we have these birth accounts of Jesus' birth is because that's the way it happened. But we still have to say, the biblical authors, they couldn't include every single detail. They had to pick certain things that they talked about and certain things they didn't talk about. So why, for example, does Matthew, and especially Luke, mention these humble beginnings of this king? Why not begin your gospel the way John began it? Remember the way John began his gospel? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John begins right off the bat by telling us he's God. Luke doesn't so much do that. Luke says he was born to these really common, normal parents, born in a really insignificant city. The people who were there who were witnesses were normal old shepherds. He was born in a manger among animals. So why does the Bible give us these accounts if these accounts don't really seem to highlight and emphasize the greatness of this king? Well, here's why. Not only is it because that's the way it happened, but the Bible gives us this Christmas story, this account, because it tells us something about God. And here's what it tells us about God. Here's what the Christmas story tells us. It tells us, it reminds us, that God's ways are not our ways. Here's the way Isaiah 55:8 says it. It's up here on the screen. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. Isaiah 55:8. The Christmas story is a prime example. It's a classic example of how God's ways are not our ways. Let me just share with you several aspects of the story that reveal that God's ways are not our ways. First of all, think about the unlikely people who are involved in the Christmas story. First of all, let's talk about Jesus' parents. We said earlier they're normal, ordinary people, not real well known. When we think of Mary, we often think of her as being about, I don't know, 30 maybe. The reality is she was probably about 13 or 15. It was very common custom in this day for young girls to get engaged. The scripture tells us she was engaged. She was most likely about 13 or 15 years old. She's just a young girl. There's nothing really significant about her. There's nothing really that's well known about her. And we should scratch our heads and go, that's kind of unique. That's kind of unlikely. I wouldn't have expected that. We also look at the shepherds who were there. Now think about this. Remember, God sent the angels to appear to the shepherds. God could have sent the angels to appear to anyone. Why the shepherds? Not only were the shepherds common, mundane, normal kinds of people, they were actually considered very dishonest and very untrustworthy in this culture. In fact, I read somewhere where they weren't even allowed to testify in a court of law. Now think about the irony here. Here are shepherds who are not allowed to testify in the court of law because they are considered dishonest, dirty kind of people. And guess what? God uses these people as the very first witnesses to Jesus. Why do that? Why not get somebody who's well known for being, you know, real trustworthy? Why use shepherds? You know why? Because God's ways are not our ways. God uses unlikely people, and not only does He use the shepherds to testify and witness to Christ, they were the very first witnesses. Not only does He use the shepherds also represent something else. They represent the types of people that God blesses and favors. One of the central messages of the New Testament is this: Jesus came not just for Jews, but for all people, for the entire world. And Luke takes that even a step further, and Luke says, Jesus even especially came for people who were unlikely. People you wouldn't expect. Lowly, common, poor people like Mary and Joseph, like the shepherds. Why are the shepherds there at the birth? Because they represent the types of people that God has His heart set on. They represent the types of people that Jesus came to save. So when we look at the Christmas story, it should make us say, this is kind of strange. Because God's ways are not our ways. He uses unlikely people. Second of all, notice the unlikely circumstances that are surrounding the Christmas story. The Christmas story should make us scratch our heads and go, this is kind of strange. This is unique. I wouldn't have expected this based on the circumstances. Think about it. First of all, there's the place where the child is born. Where he's born is one of the most humble places. He's born among animals. He's laid in a manger, a horse trough. Think about this. The creator of the universe, the one who created all things, the one who existed before anything else existed, He chose to send His Son into the world, and the way that the Son came into the world was in about the most humble conditions that He could possibly come into. When William was born, almost 2 years ago, Whitney and I were just joking about this the other day. We were so cautious about him. We didn't even want to change his little shirt because we were afraid we were going to mess something up. We wanted the nurses to come in and, you know, when he would have a dirty diaper, we didn't want to change it, not because we were grossed out by it, but because we didn't want to hurt him. We wanted the professionals to come in. And we were kind of, if I'm honest, we were kind of germophobic, you know. I would probably wash my hands maybe two, maybe three times before I'd hold him. I just wanted him to be perfect. I wanted it to be protected. If people came and visited and they asked to hold him, I would always say, yeah, would you mind washing your hands? We didn't want any germs. We didn't want any dirt. We wanted him to be just isolated from the world. We wanted everything to be perfect. Guess what? This is what's so unlikely about the Christmas story. Jesus is born into, honestly, gross conditions. Think about it. The manger that he's lying in probably has animal slobber all around it. That would have grossed me out, and I would have been wanting to get the Germex out and wipe this child down. This is the kind of conditions that Christ is born into. Unlikely circumstances. The Son of God, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, is born into these kinds of conditions. That's kind of strange. Another circumstance that's surrounding the Christmas story that's kind of strange is the way that the child is conceived. I mean, this is not the way babies are normally conceived. It's a miracle. It's what's called the virgin birth. And we're reminded once again, God's ways are not our ways. With God, the impossible becomes possible. And that's what the Christmas story reminds us of. There's another unique circumstance surrounding the child's birth. There's the conflict. If this is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, why is there conflict surrounding this child even from his birth? Remember the story, the Magi come from the east and they come to King Herod and they say, we've heard a rumor that there's been a king born here. Well, guess what? Herod doesn't like anybody challenging him as king. He's the king and no other kings. So when these Magi come asking, where's the king who's been born? Herod says, I don't like this. And Herod seeks to kill the child. And what he does something that's just incredible. He goes out and he tries to kill all two-year-old boys in the general vicinity. There is conflict surrounding the birth of this child from the very beginning. In fact, Jesus' parents have to take Jesus and go to Egypt and escape. This is the King of Kings, and his parents are having to take him out, hide him out, escape, stay in Egypt until Herod dies, and then bring him back. We have to scratch our heads and go, this is odd. This is the King of Kings, the Son of God, the one who can save the world, the one who's all-powerful, and he's got to escape to Egypt because there's a king who wants to kill him? That's strange. And we know conflict surrounds Jesus his entire life. 30 years later, another ruler would send Jesus to be crucified and killed. There's conflict that's surrounding the life of this person, Jesus Christ, the person that the Bible calls the King. And we have to step back and we have to agree with the song that says, this is such a strange way to save the world. Why do it this way? Why send your son to be born in these conditions? Why send your son to die? If you're God, you can save the world any way you want. Why do it this way? This Christmas, we should scratch our heads and go, this is kind of a strange way to save the world. Why do it this way? And here's the answer. Because God's ways are not our ways. God doesn't do things the way that we do things. I remember when I was a kid growing up in elementary school, I was one of those types of kids where if you asked me what was my favorite subject, I said recess. You know, that was who I was. And I enjoyed going out. We'd play soccer, we'd play basketball, we'd play football. And I remember in order to get the teams, we would always pick two captains and the captains would choose who was going to be on their team. And as a kid, I wanted so bad to get picked first. I wanted to get picked early. Why? Because if I got picked early, that meant that I was good. That meant that people saw me as being good, as saw me as somebody who was qualified. They saw me as somebody who could add to the team. I wanted to be at the front of the line, picked first. And if I was ever a captain, I wanted to pick the guy who I thought could help my team win. Guess what? God doesn't quite do things the way that we do them. We pick the person that we think's the most qualified, the best looking, the most popular, the smartest, the wisest. That's the person we pick. Who does God pick? God's ways are not our ways, and that's what this Christmas story reminds us of. God uses unlikely people. People like Mary. People like Joseph. People like the shepherds. And not only does he use those types of people, he blesses and places his favor on those types of people. I love the saying, God does not call people who are qualified. He qualifies people who he calls. And there's a big difference. And he qualified the people that he called, Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds. God uses unlikely people. He also uses unlikely circumstances. Circumstances like a manger scene. Circumstances like a stable. He uses unlikely circumstances. Maybe right now in your life, you feel like your circumstances and your situation is so unlikely. Maybe you feel like God is so far removed from my circumstances, my situation, there's no way he can use me. There's no way he's interested in me. He's so far from me. Maybe you feel like your circumstances are unlikely for God to be in the middle of them. And guess what? Those are the very kinds of circumstances that God delights in going into the middle of them and using them for his glory. God uses unlikely people and he uses unlikely circumstances. And that's really good news for you and me. Because the only thing that God requires of us, the only thing he requires of us is that we recognize that we are unlikely people. And the reason why we're unlikely people is because of our sin. We've been separated from God because of our sin. We are sinners against him, and therefore we do not have a right relationship with him. He has chosen by his grace to send his son into the world to take on flesh, to go to the cross, and to die a death that you and I deserve to die, to rise again on the third day. in order that we might simply look to Jesus Christ and trust in who He is and trust in what He's done, and we can be made right with God. All God requires of us is that we recognize we are unlikely people. People who don't deserve God's grace, people who deserve His wrath, people who are sinners. All God requires of you is that you say, God, I am an unlikely person to receive Your grace. I am an unlikely person to be used by You, and I need what You've done for me at the cross, and I trust in Your Son, Jesus Christ. I want to be made right with You. This Christmas, I hope that you experience the freshness. I hope you look at the Christmas story in a fresh new way and you say, wow, this really is a strange way to save the world. Wow, God's ways really aren't my ways. I hope this Christmas you come to recognize that you are a sinner and you are an unlikely candidate to experience God's favor and God's blessing. I hope you recognize you are unlikely. But even more so, I hope you recognize that God is the type of God who enjoys, He delights, He gets excited about using unlikely people. He gets excited about extending His grace and His favor and His blessing toward people who come to Him humbly and say, I recognize I'm an unlikely candidate. That's the kind of God He is. He is the kind of God who enjoys using unlikely circumstances and bringing about His purposes and getting involved in the middle of those circumstances. I hope this morning, and I hope this Christmas, you experience the freshness of this unlikely Christmas story of our King, Jesus Christ. Let me pray for us.